1968 was a tense, pivotal year in Detroit's history. The city was putting itself back together again after the riots in the summer of 67. And 1968 was the year that a 38-year-old hockey-playing priest from Detroit became a bishop, the youngest bishop in the nation. He set about working to unite black and white parishes in the Archdiocese of Detroit. These days, after a lifetime of fighting for peace, justice, and equality, Bishop Thomas Gumbleton is 85, and he's seeing his life being turned into a film that's written, produced, and directed by one of his parishioners. The film is American Prophet. Jasmine Rivera is here now. She's the writer and director of American Prophet. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
And it is a pleasure to welcome Bishop Thomas Gumbleton. It's so good to have you here.
Well, thank you very much.
Jasmine, why 1968 and why Bishop Gumbleton?
I grew up with Bishop Gumbleton as a kid going to his parish. And so I would see him on Sundays and he would be there for all of our family events like weddings, baptisms and the like. And I had no idea that he had had this amazing, fantastic journey through his life. I knew that he fought on behalf of peace and social justice, but I didn't know how incredible that story was. And I just knew him as our local parish priest. And so as I grew up and I learned more about him and what he has done internationally and nationally, I became intrigued by the fact that we have this very simple person who is like a loving member of the family who has had this incredible journey. And so I kind of wanted to go back and trace the origins of that to when he became a bishop in 1968. And it was such a pivotal time in history, as you said. And there was so much going on. To be appointed as the youngest bishop in America at that point, would be completely overwhelming, I think. So I wanted to explore that and see how, you know, this lifetime sprang from that moment.
And this is truly a grassroots production of Michiganders,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, that was a deliberate thing. I really wanted to ground it in the community because this is a story that obviously came from the community. And so from development to production, it's something that I involved a lot of folks in. So, you know, getting the story and getting oral history from Bishop Gumbleton, his friends, his colleagues, things like that, while developing the script and involving them in reading it and having a say in where it was going. And then from there on to production, really taking advantage of the amazing film professionals that we have in the state. So, you know, all the people who have been working on the big Hollywood films also were very happy to work on something very local that was a story about Detroit and our own. And then we also have an amazing professional acting community, and I definitely wanted to use them. And so everyone was very happy to contribute and become a part of this Michigan story.
Give us a sense of the story. What is the essence of the plot?
The essence of the plot is that we have a young man, Tom, who is a priest, and he's going about his own way when unexpectedly he gets a letter from the Vatican appointing him as bishop. And this is something that completely throws him off. It's something that I know from what the bishop has told me is that it came out of nowhere, and so he was very surprised and overwhelmed by it. And so taking up that challenge and then trying to be the person that he was and to keep that and coping with that change and holding on to his sense of self at the same time that all of this upheaval, because it's 1968, is going on. And then how that affects him in his outlook as well when he's listening to the parishioners and he's seeing the things that they're going through. Then that kind of is the jumping point. It's the origin story of this person who becomes a hero later on.
Bishop Gumbleton, take us to 1968. And here you were. You were a native Detroiter, so you knew this city, just consecrated as a bishop. What are your memories of the challenges and the problems that the city faced in that post-riot year?
The biggest challenge was recovering from the riot that had taken place in summer of 67. And at that point, I was living on 12th Street, actually, where the riot started. And I remember that day so vividly when the riot started. I was going down to St. Agnes Church, and right at the corner, a block away, was where the riot started. And when I drove down there in the morning for a 9 o'clock Mass, I couldn't get into the neighborhood. It was all blocked off by the police. And I had to explain to them why I was coming. I had to say Mass at the church over there, and so they let me through. And then after church, I went over and I to where it had started. Everything was calm. There was a couple of stores with windows broken, but no people milling around. And I thought, well, whatever happened, it's over. I go out to Meadowbrook in the afternoon, and I'm driving back around 7 o'clock at night, and off 75, I could see flames. And it just amazed me. I didn't know what had happened because I hadn't had the radio on during the day. And I drive home, and right into the middle of where, you know, this riot started up again. And so then that went on for 4 days, and it was a very tense period of time. And then, of course, the tensions weren't relieved immediately. No. That went on for quite a long period of time.
And here in 1968, you're a bishop now, so now you're in a position of authority in the archdiocese. Not just a parish priest, if we will.
Yes.
And you saw things that bothered you, things that you realized that racism needed to be dealt with.
Oh, absolutely. One of the main problems was the treatment of the black people in their neighborhood by the white police. At that point, we had almost 100% white police department, and there was just not understanding of the black community and on the part of the police. They didn't know the culture, the people, and it got worse over the years, even after the riot. So the tensions in that neighborhood were very, very extreme. And it almost seemed like at any point another riot could break out, although things were pretty much kept under tight control. And so I felt those tensions. And then within the church, Archbishop Dearden, later Cardinal Dearden, had tried to respond to the riot by making a contribution of the Archdiocesan Development Fund, which was an annual collection for the church. In 1968, he said he would give the whole fund to help rebuilding the city and help bringing racial justice and peace into the city. But that was very controversial among the white Catholic community. And he took a lot of
Flack.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, working closely with him, I was experiencing some of that too. And so it was a difficult time for the church as well as for the community. We're part of the community. The tensions were very severe, and especially a little bit later on as the school problems arose and cross-district busing was imposed, the tensions within the Catholic community were very high because they were concerned that maybe the diocese would impose busing on their kids in the Catholic schools. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of tension over that. And at that point, I was as an auxiliary bishop, I had some responsibility for parish development. And so I was working with people in the parishes and within the schools to try to bring about better racial harmony. And without thinking about it so explicitly at the time, part of the goal would be to prevent an exodus from the city, which did happen.
As we look now at the closed parishes.
And, yes. Yeah.
It
has changed dramatically.
I'm talking with Bishop Thomas Gumbleton and with his parishioner, Jasmine Rivera. Jasmine is the producer, writer, and director of a film, American Prophet, on the life of Bishop Gumbleton. A very, very vibrant and activist life. You were in the forefront speaking out for gay rights, against the war. In fact, you not long ago were arrested outside the White House in an anti-war protest against nuclear weapons. You actually had a voice in the clerical sexual abuse controversy within the church because you say you did experience abuse while you were in the seminary.
I was a victim of sex abuse in the seminary by one of the professors. In a way, not all that serious, but still a traumatic experience, something about which I never spoke for over 40-some years. It's a strange thing because, and it's even more severe, I've dealt with many, many victims now, survivors, they call themselves.
Yes.
And the child feels guilty somehow. I'm the one, and often the priest would say that. you know, that you have to go to confession now. And you know, it was so distorted and so evil. But I, on my own part, I never said anything to anybody about it until just a few years ago when the opportunity came along to help the survivors get legislation that would open up the statute of limitations, which for most of the survivors had been expired, and they had no chance to go into court. And yet the church at that time, and to some extent I would still say this is true, the response on the part of the church was not proper, church hierarchy, I should say, because the bishops immediately went to their lawyers. And the lawyer said, don't talk to the victims, because if it does get into court at some point, if you've talked with them, well, it's going to be looking like you agree that it happened, and so therefore you'll lose.
So legal caution overstepped pastoral responsibilities.
Exactly. And the problem was that in our legal system, it's adversarial. So the victim becomes an adversary of the bishop and vice versa. See, which is totally distorted. The bishop should have been reaching out pastorally and, you know, forget the lawyers and try to deal with the problem on a pastoral level. But they didn't, and for the most part, they still don't.
Jasmine, when I think of these issues that Bishop Gumbelton was confronting in your film, American Prophet, in 1968, and here we are 47 years later, still grappling with these same problems. As you hear him talk about what happened in 67 with the white police force and what was happening to young blacks, kind of echoes where we're the conversation we're having nationally today.
Yeah, I mean, it's very disturbing and sad. Actually, when we were filming, we had principal photography in December, and I actually made it a point to use a lot of former parishioners of the bishop. Some were extras, and then some were playing side characters. And we have one scene in the film that involved a young man, a young black man, who gets beaten by the cops. And so when we filmed that scene, it was extremely difficult because this had just happened after Ferguson. And so tensions are running high today. And so when we were actually shooting that scene, we had to be very sensitive to the cast and the crew. And the boy's mother was there, and it was very, very hard for her to see him in makeup. It was hard for us to control our own tears as we were watching the scene unfold. So it's something that is very relevant. It's here today, all of these issues about segregation.
Jasmine, what do you hope people will get from watching this film?
A number of things. I hope that they will, first of all, see the story of a person who later on in life is lauded as this heroic figure and, you know, is beloved by the peace and justice community. But to see him begin as a young man and, you know, like one of us, we all have choices. We all have different paths to take. And to see this person, you know, take that up and choose to do something good for them.
And get a lot of pushback, we should say.
Right, yeah. Right.
It drew a lot of fire from the Vatican and from the Chancery office.
Oh, definitely. And from the parishioners and even just personally. I think the film, it really shows people, you know, what priests go through. They're kind of seen as this sort of, you know, heavenly, you know, figure. But they're everyday people who go through the same conflicts and sacrifices and, you know, emotional things that we go through. So to bring that down to the human level, I wanted to present that to people so they can see, you know, they can relate to the protagonist and say, if he has to go through that, I go through that too. What can I choose to do? So there's that. And then also to see that the fact that this was made in Detroit by all these people in the community, it is possible to do beautiful local storytelling with people. It is important that we keep things like that in the community where we have folks who have the ability to go out there and create something beautiful. So there's that to also say that, you know, you don't need to go to Los Angeles or New York or have, you know, these big corporate studios behind you. If you've got a story to tell that should be told so people can benefit from hearing that, then that'd be great. And then finally, you know, for people to watch watch the film and to see a portion of Detroit's history that goes beyond, you know, the narrative that is so, you know, it's taken up by so many other voices. This is something that was written and it was made by people from Detroit. And so you kind of see this sort of soul searching. It's a closer examination of what happened to us and what did we do and where do we go from here? And so it's something that is, I think it's an unflinching look at our past that people have not examined or have not talked about. But now I think hopefully this will help spark some conversations about, you know, where can we go from here?
And lest we end without touching on what I think is one of the more intriguing and fun parts of the film, the hockey-playing priest. When I looked on the Internet Movie Database and you have Ann Arbor actor Danny Mooney cast as Claude Lemieux. So we know there's some hockey action going on. So there was actually a group of you that used to play.
Oh, yes, yes. We started back in the seminary. Especially at St. John's Seminary in Plymouth, because there's a golf course on the property and there was a small – one of the holes had a water hole, so a small artificial lake, and freeze up in the wintertime. We could play hockey from December to March, and we did on a regular basis during the recreation period. And then after we got ordained, we kept it up. Back then, this is 1956, 57, so on, there were no hockey arenas in Detroit except the Detroit Skating Club, but that was not really a hockey. Yeah. So we used to go over to Windsor and play every Wednesday afternoon, the Windsor Arena. And back then, we would play against Canadian priests, some of whom had come through junior hockey, and they were good.
I bet they were.
Yeah. So we would usually get beat by them, but once in a while, we held up and were able to defeat them. But then we just kept that up, and I kept playing till, well, I was probably in my early 60s when I finally decided it was too much trouble to go out at 11 o'clock at night and play hockey for an hour.
So what are you doing today? What are you doing these days?
Well, I carry on regular pastoral activity, and every week I do liturgies at a parish. I do weddings. I do funerals. I do baptisms. I do confirmations.
Still
and I
a
also
pastor.
Continue my work of peace and justice. I'll be making a trip to Haiti to visit the clinic that I helped to sponsor down there, and so I travel for things like that. And mostly now I'm closer to Detroit.
And there'll be a film premiere to go to soon. Jasmine Rivera is the writer, producer, and director of American Prophet, a film portraying the life of Detroit Catholic Bishop Thomas Gumbleton. Bishop Gumbleton, Jasmine, it was a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you
very
much.
Having us.
This is very enjoyable. Yes. We appreciate it.